How do you honor God? By doing everything to the glory of God. Not just not sinning, not just, okay, you don't steal from people, but by making good shoes.
If we're going to talk about you were a new creation, that means everything has to change.
Why does God not just, you know, bring people to heaven immediately after being saved? It's because there's stuff to do here. There's a point to all of this. And if we're Christians, we do it better, or at least in theory.
But if we really apply the standard that's set in Scripture, then we know that no one is good because no one is God.
We serve a storyteller. We serve a God who has a perfect plan, a sovereign will for every moment of history.
It's not about going into the world to make artists. It's about going into the world to make disciples.
This is The Christian Artist, honoring Christ through creativity. My name is Caleb.
My name is Carly.
And this is Stephen.
Hey.
And we are here for another episode of The Christian Artist. We're going to be talking with Stephen here today about magic and myths and all that good stuff. But before we get too far into that, do you want to introduce us, Stephen, to who you are and what you do?
I'm Steve Guglich. I'm a principal by day and a writer by night, and a family man as well. I have four wonderful kids and an awesome wife who support my writing. And writing is my outlet. It's one of those things that, you know, I can escape into another world. And you know, they say us authors and writers say we create our worlds, but I feel like we visit them. It's more like because you're sitting there writing and you're wondering, well, where did that come from? That's an interesting concept.
for sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. No, I'm super happy to have you on. I've been aware of your existence through the Twitter sphere for several years now, and got an email, and when you suggested to come on the podcast and have a chat with us, I was like, that sounds fantastic.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about our topic. It's been something that's kind of been rolling around in my head for various reasons for a little while now. One of them being, I currently live in Moscow, Idaho, and we're big Tolkien and Lewis fans here, and so there's a lot of talk a lot about this topic, and particularly like the idea of our world being magical, right? Like the real world, like what is that? And what could that mean? What do fairy stories have to teach us about our actual world? And so I figured we'd kind of dive into that a little bit talk about that.
Yeah. That's kind of my whole concept on the series that I'm writing called The Val Saga. And it's really the gist of, you know, what happened to the magic and all these stories that we read about and myths and legends and these fantastical creatures that once supposedly roamed the earth and why they're not there anymore. It's always fascinated me, you know, of these stories, you know, especially as you get older, you know, you hear about them when you're a kid and it's, you know, you think it's possible, you know, that you think these things are real, and then you get older and you kind of learn the truth, you know, and the magic is gone. So that was kind of my gist for writing the Val Saga, kind of reigniting that magic and writing a story that is filled with hope and wonder.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and you know, obviously on this podcast, the tagline is honoring Christ through creativity. So, you know, as Christians, kind of thinking about this topic and whether or not, like, what is magic? What, you know, what is this all about? As Christians, how do we kind of view this topic? I thought that would probably be a good place to start, is just kind of defining our terms. What is magic? You know, right? Like, what do we mean when we say that? What do we mean when we say, you know, the world is magical? There, you know, these things are fairies are magical. What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's one of those. Open terms, you know, it depends on who you're talking to or what it is you're talking about. I think magic in the sense is any sort of thing that we can't explain, that is, you know, it's the unexplainable, it's the mysterious, the thing that we encounter that brings wonder into our mind, and I think in the base sense that's what magic is.
Yeah,
You know, and then you can look at some of the others. You know, there's some would classify magic as being evil. Some would classify magic as being wonderful. You know, so it all depends on, I guess, just like anything, context is key.
Yeah. No, I like that as a starting point, right? Magic as the unexplainable makes sense. It's kind of funny, though. I'm currently one of my favorite authors is Brandon Sanderson.
Oh, mine too.
Yeah. Yeah. A big fantasy author who just writes really, really cool stories. And one of his, you know, his kind of like defining feature of his stories is the way he treats his magic system. So very, very detailed, you know, rule-based magic systems. And I just think it's funny. I agree with your definition ultimately, right? Like magic is the unexplainable, but then you look at something like Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn or Stormlight Archive or whatever else. And you look at, well, actually he does a very good job of explaining to you exactly how it works. But even with that, I feel there's aspects of it that just still are unexplainable. It's like, at the end of the day, why can these people ingest metals and suddenly gain power? Well, there isn't really an explanation for that.
No, he doesn't really explain that, but he does a darn good job of going into the details and almost establishing a science. And I think that's... Yeah. You know, like we said, defining magic. So when you're talking about fantasy magic, that's a different story. You know, you look at all these different, just like you said, the Brandon Sanderson, Star Wars and the Force, you know, they've, you know, that's the same thing. It's fantasy magic. It's explained in the best possible terms that the author can come up with, but it's still, you know, it's still magic.
Yeah. Yeah, so when we're thinking about this in terms of, you know, as Christians and kind of looking at our own world, when we say magic is the unexplainable, I think the next question I had on this list is magic real? But I think like your definition kind of already tells us, yes, of course, that is real. As Christians, we know there are things that for us as mortals, right, is unexplainable, right? Yeah. The way that God spoke everything into nothing. Unexplainable, and we would consider it in one sense magic.
That's an interesting way of looking at it, for sure. Yeah,
yeah. And so,
I forgot I was muted for that.
Yeah. And I so the idea of like, is magic, you know, from a Christian worldview, looking at our actual world, is it the same thing as miracles? Is there some overlap between it and something else? Like, what do we mean when we say, like, yeah, you know, I think by the definition, we would say, like, Jesus turning water into wine is magic. But what does that mean in terms of, I think one thing that a lot of people who are fans of Tolkien or Lewis and kind of in that vein of viewing the mythological, viewing myths as part of actual history in some sense and understanding their value and not just dismissing them as children's stories, but understanding that there are real truths being expressed in these things. I think there's an aspect of this that kind of comes back to like the idea that everything around us is magical. I'm curious what your thoughts are on that. Like, if we look around the world, is there a sense in which we can say like everything around us is magical?
Well, I think it goes back to that definition you were talking about. Now, you know, as a Christian, actually, I can go back even further. I grew up as a kid believing in everything, you know, because that's what my dad believed in, you know, Santa Claus, everything. I mean, I was the only sixth grader in school who still believed in Santa Claus, and I would have fought any kid who told me otherwise, you know, because my dad would tell me all these fantastic stories, you know, and then I got older and I realized, my dad was not really telling me the truth. And that kind of hurt. That hurt. I remember that year as halfway through my sixth grade year, finding out that there was no Santa Claus. And then I started to debate, you know, what else is not real. And for many years, I grew up as a borderline atheist agnostic. And then, you know, my search for the truth, I knew, you know, when you look at mythology, you look at legend, you look at all these examples and you look at all these religions, you know, religions are based on faith in the impossible or the miraculous or the wonderful. And there had to be some truth out there. So that was, for me, that was a fact-finding mission of learning about Christianity, you know, and I dabbled, you know, in all these other religions, just trying to find out the truth. Mm-hmm. And then I had a friend who challenged me one day, and, you know, just he did not force his beliefs upon me, but he challenged me because I was out to prove him wrong, that there was no God, that there was no Christ. And through my research and trying to disprove what he was saying was possible, I didn't find faith, but I found so much overwhelming evidence of the existence of God that it tipped my belief system. So then when you're faced with that and you talk about magic and then you talk about faith, I think they're almost two different things. Because magic, when we think of magic in the sense of fantasy and you know, or even, you know, fake magic when the magicians on stage do magic,
right?
You know, it's different than faith. Faith is when you're believing in something that there's remarkable evidence, but yet you don't have the proof. And then you jump to that, you take that leap of faith that they talk about, and then you see the miraculous, you see the wonder, and underneath it all is that incredible love that Christ had for us in what he did in living on earth and doing doing the things that he did to rescue us from our own sin. Mm-hmm. I think you have to separate them as different. You know, the miracles that he did were not magic. They were his ability as creator of the universe to be able to do those things that no one else can do. We can't do them,
right?
Because we're not the creator. You know, he spoke the world into existence. He turned water into wine. He, you know, what he says, what he speaks becomes truth. He could say blue is black and blue would suddenly become black because that's the power mm-hmm. that he has. So it's not magic. It can be many other people would probably try to say otherwise. But again, if you look for the evidence is there.
Yeah, I'm curious to pursue that a little bit further. So if that's not magic, what is? If we're talking about like real magic, right? If does magic actually exist in our world? And if so, what is it? Right?
Well, I think you can go back to the term, you know, the definition of magic, you know, what and I believe I did research on this years ago because I was doing research for my book, but mm-hmm. I know back in the Hebrew times, magic was explained as something that, you know, that the pagans did, you know, and the same thing with the, you know, the Sumerians had powers, but I don't think they described it as magic. So the, you know, the Hebrew word for magic, I believe, is kishif, you know, and it's something that the pagans used to do things. You know, you think of the story of Baal, you know, when they were trying to call down the fire or make the fire, and then they were challenging God into saying, you know, God can't extinguish this fire because Baal's going to do it, and then of course God does his thing and totally makes them all look foolish. But so I think it's just something that it's become a term of the unexplainable. I mean, like mana, you know, the word mana from you know, and I think in modern terms in fantasy, mana and magic are almost interchangeable. You know, I remember playing The Secret of Mana when I was a kid. You know, it was a secret of magic is what it was called. But, you know, magic, what does mana mean in the Bible? It just means, what is this? I don't know what this is. So it's the Hebrew word for what, or the Hebrew translation.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I think that's what it is. You know?
Yeah. So I think I'm going to push back slightly. I think what you were saying earlier on, you know, the miracles of Jesus or whatever aren't magic so much as just like things that you have faith in. I think for using the definition of the unexplainable, I think they have to fit in that category. There's
okay.
obviously a difference between like God himself supernaturally reaching down and doing something and us attempting to manipulate And the way that I've heard it kind of explained, and this kind of goes into our next question a little bit, is magic in the sense of like power, right? To do things in the world that are like, you know, different from the normal things you'd be able to do with your own physical body, right? Mm-hmm. Is basically it's power, and the difference between whether or not it's being used for good or evil, like whether or not it's witchcraft or something else, is how you're going about gaining that power, right? So for someone like you know, Moses or Elijah in the Bible, who did amazing wonders, and I think the way that the Bible describes them, it almost seems as if they, especially because, like, you know, say the story of Moses hitting the rock, for example, and drawing mm-hmm. forth water, it wasn't like he was just merely a channel, per, you know, in a very like primary cause sense, like for God to do something, because God, in his, you know, prescriptive will, didn't want Moses to strike the rock. He wanted him to just like touch it. Right. Yeah. And so there's an aspect of, I think there are cases of people in the Bible having power and then misusing it. So it's like they do have this power and it's been invested to them from God. And so you have situations like that where it's obvious that these people have magic in the way that we would describe it in today's nomenclature. And that, but are using it in most cases, you know, to the glory of God, because God gave it to them and they're using it to help the people of God and so on and so forth. As opposed to someone who's just like taking power, right? Manipulating mm-hmm. the world around them to, you know, bring it under their will instead of, you know, humbly accepting investiture being given to them, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably one of the main differences if we're looking at. And so the next question here is like, is magic inherently bad? And I would say no, because I would consider the miracles done in the Bible, especially by, you know, the prophets, to be magic. I don't know what else you would categorize them as in that this power sense, right? It's the power of the supernatural sure. at their disposal. Yep. But they're using it in a good way because God gave it to them. They're not misusing it, right? That sort of idea, as opposed to witchcraft in scripture, right? Which would be, manipulating, taking,
yeah, using it for what it's not intended for. Exactly. I mean, if you
like necromancy, you know, for example, right? That sort
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if God is the creator of everything, he's got to be the creator of magic as well. So, you know,
yeah,
you,
right.
And it could be misused.
Yeah. Yeah, so
that's a good point.
As a kind of follow up to that, like, I would argue then that, you know, when parents are like, don't read Harry Potter because it has magic.
Oh no.
I think they can't actually follow through. And it's one thing to say, you know, this is a book about summoning demons. You shouldn't read it. I was like, yeah, I agree with you. If it's glorifying summoning demons, don't read that. But magic as a blanket term, something supernatural happening, using powers to do something supernatural, is not inherently good or bad. It's a category. It's a mm-hmm. it's like you know, art or whatever, right? Like it can be used for good, can be used for bad, but as a category, it's not inherently anything until it actually becomes a specific thing, right? Until we focus down from the category into the specific, into the individual.
That's a good point. Okay. Yeah.
So
I mean, yeah, you hit a nerve there with the parents who don't let their kids read mm-hmm. certain books, and I just don't get it. I don't see how you can. Oh yeah, Narnia's okay, but Harry Potter's not.
Yes.
Because, you know, or this, you know, or Star Wars is okay, but Harry Potter's not. I mean, how do you come up with this this conclusion? It's the same thing, you know, with Dungeons and Dragons. Although when I was growing up, it had that stigma. Nowadays, it doesn't seem to have that at all, but it's, you know, I just don't see, you know, I just don't think if a parent is going to make those blanket statements or those parameters, I don't think they've done enough research to really justify. It's just, I don't want to do it. I don't want my kids reading something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you hit the right nerve there specifically, on the parents will always be like, Narnia and Lord of the Rings are okay. but Harry Potter isn't. Yeah. And it's to an extent, they are hitting on the correct category distinction. They understand that there's a good type of magic and a bad type of magic. They mm-hmm. just don't get that just because something is called magic doesn't mean that doesn't equal witchcraft, right? Like, just because it's they're using terms that, you know, we get a little iffy by sometimes in the Christian sphere doesn't mean it's automatically the bad kind of magic.
We
all understand the good type of magic in miracles, in the fantastical, in Lord of the Rings and Narnia and whatever else. I know, Carly, you read growing up, what was it? There was like a dragon series. What was it called again?
Oh, yeah. Brian Davis's books. He has like three different series that are all like linked together with the same characters and stuff. It was weird. I don't necessarily recommend it, but as a kid, I enjoyed them.
Yeah, I think there's
one of those weird theological implications in there.
Yeah. I think Dragons in Our Midst was the series that I read a couple books of. And I think it was the idea. It was actually kind of similar in some respects, Stephen, to your project, in the sense that like dragons and Arthurian myth and stuff were real. And it was kind of coming back in a modern context.
Oh, that's cool. I like that kind of stuff. And,
I think the concept was cool. I think I agree with Carly. I don't know if I'd recommend them per se, because I don't know if they're the best written books, but But that's the sort of thing that, like, I think parents understand. They would give their kids something like that and be like, oh, yeah, Christian dragons sort of stuff, right? But really, when you get down to it, it was like, what, didn't, like, a girl get trapped inside a magical stone at one point? And there's, like, a whole other... Yeah, a whole bunch of stuff like that that happened. And, you know, that's magic. You know, is it okay for your child to read about it as long as it has capital C Christian stamped really heavily on the cover? You know, so you just got to be discerning about that.
I think discerning is good. And I think parents need to realize part of their role in life is teaching. I mean, we have to, you know, if you're going to let your kid read Harry Potter, you want to teach them. Okay, there are certain things in it that are, you know, that are not good. I mean, but just like any story, you know, you're going to watch Star Wars, you want to teach them that certain things are not good. You know, even some of the morally gray characters, you know, are not, you know, you are not making good decisions. And you want to point that stuff out to your kids to make sure that they, you know, they get that. They get that this is wrong. You know, he lied. He just lied to his friend there. You know, that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. You know, that kind of
thing. Yeah, and I think a lot of this has to do with age range, too. Like, there is something to be said for, you know, when a child is 5, like, they probably don't need to be reading a bunch about morally gray characters because they don't have the discernment to understand those sorts of things. But as they grow up, they should be getting more and more complex stories and have to be able to use their own discernment to figure these things out and have those teaching moments with their parents where they can point these things out to them and help them understand how to be discerning. Because if you go straight from like God's not dead to you know, whatever movie is coming out next, you're gonna be lost if that's what you are familiar with, right? You're not gonna have any categories for the messy world that we actually live in.
True.
And one of the things that obviously, I haven't actually read the Harry Potter books because that was one of the things that my parents didn't want me to do as a child. Once we got older, they were like, we don't care if you read them anymore. But at that point, I was like past the age where I was interested in it. And so now I've seen the movies now, but I haven't read the books. But one of the things in the movies, at least, that stands out to me in comparison with Lord of the Rings and Narnia is it's very clear who is using magic for good and who is using it for bad.
Yep.
And in what ways is it bad to use magic? Like, clearly, none of the kids watching those movies are saying, oh, Voldemort is doing really cool things with magic. Like, he's clearly the bad guy.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And so, and that's one of the things that's really good about the concept of magic in fiction at all is like, it's very easy to portray like, this is who the good people are and this is who the bad people are. Even though magic isn't a thing that we really, you know, like people aren't waving wands around in daily life, but we can tell, oh, the way that people are using this medium is good or bad because we just have a sense of morality because we're image bearers of God. Doesn't necessarily even matter that J.K. Rowling is a Christian or not. She can still make a good story about magic where there's clear distinctions between right and wrong and how to use it.
Yeah, like, you know, it's pretty clear that Voldemort using blood magic to resurrect himself is bad, right?
Right. You would hope.
It's pretty clear. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and cool. So talking about a little bit more about like what the Bible has to say about magic, right? Like it does have categories the nation of Israel, it was literally like, you will be stoned to death if you do this. Right. There are categories that we are 100% off limits to us. That doesn't necessarily mean we can't, like, say we're writing a story. It doesn't mean we can't, again, write about bad people doing the bad magic, right? Because that means, one example I had pointed out to me recently that I thought was very interesting is Jesus tells a parable at one point in which someone uses the Lord's name in vain. And this is Jesus telling them the parable. And so I thought about that. I was like, that really is a good like teaching point for us as storytellers. Just because a character sins in the story doesn't make you that doesn't mean you sinned for putting it in there. If we say that's true, if that's our belief, that means God is a sinner for telling the story of the world in which there are many sinners, right? So we have to be careful not to like indict God unnecessarily, or, you know, not that there's a necessary way to indict God, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So in terms of like bad magic, let's talk about that a little bit. If we're trying to come to clear conclusions about like what is good, what is bad, if we're navigating this with discerning minds, what would you say, Stephen? How do you treat it in your book?
In the Val saga, I guess I kind of took a page out of Brandon Sanderson's book, or not his books, but his belief system on how magic is. Yeah, his playbook, exactly. Because he has the Sanderson's laws of magic. And so I wanted to make sure that, you know, I sort of followed them. But I also wanted to tie it into science in some way. So what is magic in the Val saga is more a manipulation of energy, you know, precisely like zero point energy. You know, there's the science where they're trying to figure out how to the energy between atoms and stuff like that, how powerful it is and whatnot. So I did a lot of research on that, and I came up with the concept that humans can't use magic, but the enchanted people, like elves and dwarves, they have access to magic because they're conduits of magic. So they're able to manipulate the energies that are around them to do, you know, pretty classic magical stuff, create energy orbs that they fight with, or to heat things up to produce things that aren't there, that they're able to have that. So, you know, all the enchanted creatures are able to do that. And where the evil magic comes in is when you take magic by harming something or someone. You know, in a sense, it's kind of like blood magic, but because the world, the way the energies flow, ebb and flow through the world, they can be pushed through in using emotions. So if you can incite somebody's emotions, if you can hurt them, if you can you can cause them agony or pain, then you can create a flow of energy in the direction that you want it, to use it and make it more powerful in a sense. And that's kind of what the goblins do in my stories.
Cool. Yeah, no, I think that's a great distinction. I think one thing to point out there that I thought was interesting is it almost seems like then for the, you know, magical creatures of your world, it's almost like magic for them is just our science, right?
Yeah.
Like so we use science to do the kind of things that are considered impossible until we figure them out. And you know, same thing with it, which is a pretty classic take on this, especially for stories in the using the themes that you're using. So I think that's a perfectly reasonable way to go about it, for sure. And let's jump to a different question real quick, because I think it will tie in with what you just said. So what's the difference between science fiction and fantasy? Right? Like both of them are about things that aren't real and are reality, right? Like one is stuff that didn't happen and another is stuff that could happen but hasn't happened yet. But like besides that, is there a line between like pseudoscience sort of magic science stuff that happens in science fiction novels that is maybe theoretically possible, what we haven't figured out yet, and pure just straight up magic and fantasy? What's the difference there?
Well, Brandon Sanderson just did his distinction on that, and he was talking about how science fiction, it was a TikTok he released a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying, you know, the difference for him is that with science fiction is it's the science of the story, it's based on a current science, and then it's amplified, it's taken to the next level, you know, like, you know, either whether it's time travel or just space travel, you know, and everything can be explained scientifically in some way, whereas fantasy, it's almost unexplainable. There's laws around it and whatnot, but it's more of a, it's not based on any real science. It's based on, the fantastic becoming possible. I think that's kind of that's the terminology used.
Yeah.
You know, take Star Wars, for example. Star Wars is not science fiction. People will call it science fiction, but Star Wars is science fantasy. If at all, I mean, because it does take scientific concepts and kind of takes them to the next level.
But then breaks them constantly because there's sound in space for some reason.
Sound in space. And there's so many. Yeah, so if anything, maybe it's pure fantasy.
I think I would argue it is. It just has like a veneer. It's supposed to feel science-y, but it's not actually. Because not even the technology doesn't actually, we don't get, it's not an extrapolation on what we do with our current technology at all. It's just like,
That's a good point.
Giant spacecraft. We don't really know how they work or why they work. We don't know why hyperspace is a thing at all. It's just is, right? It's magic. But I think it's interesting to talk about this though on a level, because what's interesting about science itself is that the fantastical really is only. So for science, like doing something like, going into space, like going to the moon. Let's just take that as an example. Before we actually figured out how to do it, it was functionally magic, right? To consider the possibility that we could do that, it's just magic, right? There's no way we could do it. There's no really line of logic that could lead you there yet because we haven't figured out anything related to it. But then there becomes a level at some point where suddenly we've understood enough about the way the physical world works, how God set it up to work, that we can suddenly realize something like space travel. And we're like, wow, we could actually accomplish this. So I'm curious about the difference there, because it feels like there might be plenty of things that are currently in the realm of fantasy that one day might not be, based on how far we managed to progress technologically, right? Like, and I think there's an aspect of that that is sort of scary, because there's certainly stuff that we probably shouldn't mess with. Like I think about all the like gene modification stuff that people like to mess with these days and whatnot. And there's definitely a level I feel like science is like magic because of the categories that God uses in scripture to define good and evil magic. I think those I think there's definitely a connection here, because in one sense, science is really accomplishing the impossible. It's just, it happens slowly enough that by the time we get around to it, it doesn't seem magical to us anymore. And so I think there's definitely something to be said for using categories that we would normally talk about magic with to also apply to science in some way. Specifically, one example would be using aborted fetal cell lines to you know, do medical research or whatever, right?
Right.
I think that functionally qualifies as necromancy, right?
Yeah. That's a good point.
What else
point.
Would it
yes.
be, right?
Yes.
That's what you're doing. You're taking dead bodies and you're like you taking power, right? That's what
yes.
you're doing. And so
wow.
I think there's definitely
that's
something, there's definitely something there, I think, to kind of, that kind of blends them together a little bit for me.
Mm.
And so, you know, something like, you know, Brandon Sanderson's Mistborn stuff where, you know, you're ingesting metal and suddenly you're gaining powers. Obviously, there's like a level of that where there's never going to be a point where we can do that.
Right.
Yeah. But that's because Brandon Sanderson's world works on fundamentally different laws of the universe.
He created his own universe.
Different universe.
It's
exactly.
Yeah.
But because our universe, it was made by a storyteller himself, God, and God himself also put magic in his world. Right. Which I think we've kind of come to the conclusion now talking through this. That means that really science, I feel for us is in a way, if it's done rightly, right. If it's done, in the way that you are humbly accepting power instead of grasping and manipulating and taking it. The categories still apply. And so we can kind of consider them very similar, if not kind of crossing lines here. Which I think ultimately more than anything, the reason I brought that up is I think we need to be wary with it. Because we can do it very wrong and we're going to end up crossing those same boundaries that people who tried to control the physical world through magic in the past crossed themselves and were judged for, right? So I think it's not helpful to completely what am I trying to say? It's not helpful to claim that they're completely different things, because then we might get into a realm where we aren't as wary as we should be, because we're like, this is just a category that isn't covered by anything, right?
We're getting too comfortable.
We're getting too comfortable. And I feel like there's just kind of an interesting thing I've been thinking about recently with that, that I think is certainly applicable in that same realm.
We're getting more and more comfortable with science. So anything that we can explain things more and more now, so it's easier to give into that, you know, or explain it away. Oh, it's just science. It's something that we can do, you know. It's not evil, you know. I'm fascinated by that idea of the aborted stem cells. That's really an interesting concept.
I can't claim to be the originator of that thought. That was Andy Wilson on Stories for Soul Food podcast.
Cool.
So you can check out that if you're interested.
I'll have to check that out.
I honestly think you would really enjoy that podcast. It seems right up your alley with that sort of stuff.
Cool.
For sure. As we were talking, I was thinking about, I don't know if you've ever seen one of the bell curve memes where it's like, on the left, you have a dumb person right on the IQ scale who says a thing, let's say, you know, Christ is Lord. And then the middle person who's supposed to be average intelligence, it's like, no, what are you talking about? Christ can't be Lord because of logic and science and whatever. And then the highest intelligent person on the other end is like, Christ is Lord. So I feel like there's like a fun, when you were talking about your path to Christianity, it kind of reminded me of that idea. I feel like we are currently in this kind of weird arc in human civilization where the Enlightenment and modernity and postmodernity have caught us right in the middle there, right? We used to be the dumb, you know, middle-aged medieval people who thought that magic was real and miracles existed and God was real and all this stuff. And now we are the enlightened
apologists.
The enlightened people who just need logic and reason and science, but really that's just average intelligence. That's like you have enough intelligence to not understand what's going on, and then when you get to the highest level, right, when you actually pass beyond that and you come face to face once more, right, it's the whole, you used to believe in Santa Claus, you realized Santa Claus can't be real, and so you said, well, none of this can be real, And right. then you realize, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Santa Claus yeah. isn't real, but Jesus is.
Is, and, exactly. Right? Amen.
I feel like that's there's cool. there's a fun arc there to consider in when we're talking about magic and the supernatural and miracles and all this stuff and myths and history and all that stuff too, where we're currently very enamored as a people with logic and science and reason and all these things that we think can explain away myths and magic and all this stuff that our ancestors assumed to be real, just took for granted. And, you know, the whole thing about science being that because we have such an understanding of science in the natural world, we're starting to get too comfortable with ourselves and thinking we can just understand anything. But really, when you get to that highest level, when you get all the way through the arc and you get back to Christ as Lord over everything, you get there by realizing the only thing science has actually done is helped us to understand more that we don't know anything.
Because, that's right.
Right. Because even understanding something like, you know, how weather works, when you actually get down to it, we can predict in some capacity how weather works, but we don't really actually know why it works the way it does, why it was set up that way in the first place, how it keeps running. Right. There's certain like there's a rapper I used to listen to. He's apostatized, so I won't say his name or recommend him. But old song okay. I used to listen to that had a great line in it that was basically along the lines of the song. It was kind of like a spoken word thing, and it was talking about how, you know, people this whole idea of like people just like disregarding God because science and whatever. And one of the lines in the song is like, we still don't understand yawning. Just literally that simple fact of no one actually knows. Like literally to this day, we have all these theories about why people are yawn. Yeah. No one knows. We have no actual evidence to come down once and for all on why people yawn. It's just a thing we do. Right. And that's the sort of stuff that I feel like as we start coming out of this modernity arc in the history of human civilization, we're going to start coming back around to, wow, all of this science has only made us realize how small we really are.
Right.
And I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that, but that's,
no, it's an interesting theory. I mean, you know, with that whole idea of that enlightenment, I hope there's going to be another enlightenment. I don't know as far as the, you know, I think if we could look at all the biblical signs and things that are happening in the world today, I guess, you know, the next enlightenment may not be until until we go through the tribulation, or the tribulation happens, you know, because people are going to have to see Christ in the spirit form in order to finally tip over, because more and more people, they're so blinded by the science of what they think they believe that they're not willing to look at all the evidence. And I thank God that wasn't me. I thank God that when I came face to face with the evidence, that I took that leap of faith. I didn't stick to, you know, to modern science.
Yeah. Yep. So changing the conversation slightly, I know there's another aspect of this that I want to touch on. So your series is right about the idea that magic used to be common knowledge. Everybody knew that this was a thing, and then magic has kind of slowly disappeared from the world. And there's something to be said, you know, we're talking about the medievals and before that, people who just kind of assumed that this stuff was real, that fairies existed, that dragons existed, that all this stuff existed, right? What is that relationship between like myths and history? Is there credence to stories in our real world about fairies and trolls and unicorns and dragons?
Well, that's the thing that really fascinates me about it, because when I started really digging into this, I mean, the things that I discovered, you know, I mean, when I first became a Christian, one of the things that blew me away was the description of Behemoth and Leviathan in Job, and you know, we're talking about, you're talking about a dragon, basically, you know, in there, you know, sounds, you know, like a Brachiosaurus and dragon mixed together. And it's like, whoa, Okay, so those things did exist at one time.
Yep.
From a creation standpoint, mm-hmm. And then you have other like, have you ever heard of Paracelsus?
The name sounds familiar.
So he was this like unbelievable. I mean, his real name was Dr. von Hohenheim, and he was like back in the 16th century. He was super well known for, you know, the Surgeon General of America. He was like the Surgeon General of the Renaissance Europe at the time, and mm-hmm. very well respected, very, you know, very well known. He's just his scientific theories and his medical breakthroughs were super well known. But he's also the guy who claimed that gnomes existed. I mean, he actually would follow. He said he actually followed gnomes into dungeons and underground, and he said he saw them walk through walls, and he came up with the name gnome. I mean, he used it, and it's like, what? I mean, how is that even possible? Mm-hmm. You know, and then and there are things like that all throughout history. It's like, okay, where did they come up with this stuff? I mean, sure, some of it, I believe a lot of it was to. Was a control thing, you know, don't go out into the dark because
here there be dragons,
the dragons and that kind of stuff, or, you know, telling children stories to keep them in check. I think a lot of that did come from that, but, there are just certain things like, you know, you can't explain away Paracelsus unless he was just taking some, you know, he was a toxicologist, so maybe he was hallucinating from the stuff that he was studying. Yeah. But still, I mean, you know, he actually claimed that, you know, there were gnomes, and he talked, and there were other supernatural things that he studied. So I thought that was fascinating. And then, you know, you take other accounts. There's so many different accounts of these, you know, supposed mythological sightings. So I took a lot of that, and that's where I came up with the world of the Veil Saga, which is really our own world. It's just that it just explains, you know, all those myths and legends. It just explains those away on how they are happened.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite genres of like alternate Earth stories is like secret history, like it's usually called.
Yes.
Like things have been happening under, you know, in the shadows the entire time, and you just found out about it now. Like Harry Potter is a secret history, and
that's pretty much what's going on there and I enjoyed, you know, I really enjoyed it because I was able to take all these accounts and take the different fantasy races that we know them by and kind of create their own, you know, imagine how they would have evolved throughout history.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think, too often we as moderns will just dismiss myths out of hand, right? Just like automatically, this is just made up, right?
Right.
But myths come from somewhere, right? Like they don't just spontaneously generate themselves. Like they come from actual things that happened, right? They don't just like manifest from nowhere. And so I think there's like kind of two aspects to this to think about as Christians, right? There's one side of it, which is, you know, something like a dragon, for example. There's the whole, you know, me as a creationist, I can understand pretty clearly dragons in history. Like there's, everyone has a dragon myth, like almost every single culture in all of existence. And so it seems pretty clear to just say, well, we know that these giant lizards were around at some point. That makes sense that's just what they were, right? It's just dinosaurs are dragons. You can make sense of that as a Christian, because you know that all land animals were created on day six, and you know, they came through Noah's Ark. Like it all lines up just perfectly with our own understanding of the world. I don't know how, again, like most moderns are just going to like wave it away and maybe say like, oh, it's just a big bear or something. Like just, they just exaggerated it but that doesn't actually follow.
No, because when you look at the description of Behemoth in Job, I mean, they want to say that's a hippopotamus. There's no way that's a hippopotamus. You cannot
tail
explain.
Tail sways like a cedar.
You ever see a hippopotamus tail? Nah, I don't think so.
Yep. And then, but then there's another aspect to this, which is the supernatural. We know that the supernatural is real, right? So one thing that I think is very interesting, we're looking at stories of, you know, certain mythological creatures such as like fairies and trolls and those sorts of things, but also like the gods of the Greek and Roman and Egyptian pantheons. Like these things came from somewhere, right? These people worshiped these things for some reason, and it wasn't just they made them all up, because that's not how people do things, right? People don't ex nihilo generate things. they're taking from things when they make up things. Right? Stories don't come from nothing. They come from all sorts of things that are sometimes mixed together to create something new. But
it could be as simple as the telephone game, you know, person says I saw this, and the next person says, oh, he saw this, and
But some person actually did see something, right? Somewhere.
They saw something, right? Yeah.
And as Christians, like, you know, there's one aspect where we can just explain and say, yes, there were animals called dinosaurs that fit this description. But we also know that demons are real, right?
Yes.
And so very easily we can just be like, oh, yeah, you know what? Baal probably did exist and he was a demon, right?
Yeah.
100%. Astaroth did exist. Demon, right?
Yeah.
It's pretty clear to us. Understanding that, you know, not being materialists, not having to have a physical explanation for everything, we can very easily understand these things, understand myths, understand mythical creatures and gods and all these things, because we have an understanding that the supernatural actually does exist. It does influence things. And that doesn't mean that Zeus was an actual god the way that the Greek myths make him out to be. He didn't actually imprison his father Uranus and all the other titans in the underworld, but he was a demon who convinced a lot of people that he did those things, right?
Right. I agree with that. Yes, 100%.
Pretty well, and I think that's interesting, right? I think that's a way more interesting take just from a pure storytelling perspective than these people made them up. Because that's
I touch on that a lot actually in the Vale sagas. We're on the same page there. That's interesting.
In my own fantasy universe, which is a little bit more on the side of the Brandon Sanderson spectrum of things, so it's like secondary world fantasy, that's a lot of some of those themes I play with a lot in the sense of you know, lowercase g gods exist and they influence the world, and some of them are angels and some of them are demons in that kind of category sense, right? Some of them actually are serving capital G God and some of them aren't. Some of them fell away and some of them didn't. And it's pretty easy to make the myths make sense when you have that understanding, because you know that there's an entire race of beings, you know, heavenly beings that do exist and do influence the world either by the behest of God or Satan.
That's cool. That's kind of that's right up my alley. That's exactly what I've pondered in my storytelling.
Yep, for sure. So one thing to kind of start wrapping up with, There's a kind of popular idea that goes around in my circles, maybe some of yours as well, where we can maybe get too far, too obsessed with this idea of the world is magical, and maybe go too far in the other direction. Right. So we don't want to be materialists and say that, you know, miracles that God is a clockwork God and just kind of set the world spinning and then left, right? That's not the God we serve. That's not the God that actually exists. He actively sustains everything. He, you know, if he stopped doing that, the world would just cease to exist, right? It doesn't have like an independence apart from him. But we don't want to go too far in the other direction and try to say that like everything is magical in the sense that everything is a miracle, right? I've heard that some people basically say, you know, there's really no difference between childbirth and the virgin birth, because they're both miracles. We don't know why they happen. They just happen, right? I don't think we can go that far, because God did make the world with rules, right?
Yes.
The natural world functions in a particular way, and it works that way because God is actively keeping those boundaries intact. And we know that miracles are miracles because they break those rules, right? And obviously, God can break those rules whenever he wants, because he's the one who made the rules, but the rules do exist. And just because we can say, and I would agree, like, childbirth is wondrous, but that doesn't make it a miracle in the same way that, like, the virgin birth was. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, what do you think? I love that you brought up the virgin birth, because, you know, you think about how, as Christians, you know, I believe that God set the world in motion, and he used science, you know, in a lowercase s science, you know, but he put things in order. He had rules, he had regulations, he had properties and all that stuff. And you think about the virgin birth, and you think about your basic genetics and procreation, you know, there has to be 23 chromosomes from the male and 23 chromosomes from the female, in order for that body to exist. And so we know that 23 of those chromosomes came from Mary. It's interesting to wonder, you know, that those other 23 chromosomes had to be the miraculous, the miraculous part of who Jesus was and how he was made. And I believe that, you know, it is a miracle, but I think the miracle, when you look at it from a scientific perspective, comes down to those 23 chromosomes that God used to create, or to bring Jesus, and I shouldn't say create, but to bring Jesus into the world.
To incarnate the Christ. Yeah, we're not Jehovah's Witnesses here. We don't believe that Jesus was a created being. I think a good verse for this, and I don't know the reference off the top of my head, but I know there is a part in a place in scripture where, you know, it says that God sets the boundaries of the oceans and says, like, beyond this point, you cannot go any further, right? Like, that's the sort of stuff that is, and granted, some of those statements are in the Psalm, so sometimes you have to take those things with a grain of salt as to whether or not these are, like, factual statements in the same way that, like, you know, the way gravity works are, or if they're poetic stuff. But I think that it perfectly lines up with our understanding of the way God made the universe to say, there are rules, and they usually function the same way, because God has set the boundaries of these natural forces, and he wants us to discover things through science so that we can gain dominion over the world, right? As he gave us in the dominion mandate in Genesis, and then repeated again after Noah and the flood, he was like, you need to conquer this stuff. You need to figure it out. You need to understand it. And we wouldn't be able to do that. We wouldn't actually be able to follow his command if the world had no rules. If birth was just as capital M miraculous as the virgin birth, then we would never be able to understand how any of it works, right?
Right.
That's just not the world we live in.
No, I mean, but it's mind-blowing to think that there are people who are just there. They can discount that stuff. They can explain it off in the way they want. You know, a few years back, I watched this thing on the Discovery Channel about the 10 plagues and how they try to scientifically explain the 10 plagues. And, you know, but the thing that they didn't, you know, the elephant in the room was, okay, you explain how each one of those 10 plagues could happen, but you never explained how it was possible for all 10 to happen in the same time span. I mean, it's just, there's no way. I mean, you're trying to discount God and you know, prove the inexistence of the creator, and it's just it doesn't work. I mean, when you look at there's so much evidence out there it's irrefutable.
I agree.
I'm 50 years now, 50 years old now, and at age 28, that's when it just blew my mind, you know, that was all there.
Carly, do you have any thoughts as we kind of close here? I know you were putting Finn to bed there for a while, Sue.
Yeah, I missed quite a bit because my Bluetooth headphones only many walls. But
I know you listen to Stories or Soul Food and have kind of thought about this topic before as well, but it's fine if you don't have any other thoughts because we're kind of winding down here anyway. But cool. Yes.
I can't think of anything specific.
Yeah. All good. Steven, do you want to go ahead and give us a little bit more of a kind of pitch and maybe drop some some links and whatnot to kind of tell us where we can find your series and what's it about and all that stuff?
Yeah, well, this has been I'd say a lifelong work of mine that I came up with this idea of explaining where the magic went. And you know, this first book brings in certain mythological characters as well as enchanted beings, and then someone who is just an ordinary guy who gets caught up in all of it. And it's available right now on Kickstarter. We have a pre-launch or pre-order campaign going on. So you can find the link at thevalesaga.com. The main thing that I really want people to get from the Vale Saga is that it's a story of hope. I mean, that's one of the things that I subscribe to, is I want people to read the stories and feel that sense of wonder, but also leave with that sense of hope, because I kind of write from the C.S. Lewis perspective, in the sense where C.S. Lewis once said that the world doesn't need more Christian stories. It needs more writers, Christian writers who are writing good stories.
Yep.
And that's what this is. It's not a Christian story. It's just a story about hope. It's a story about, I lost my train of thought there. It's a story. It's a story that at the heart of it is about wonder and hope and rekindling what was lost as a child.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm looking at the Kickstarter right here. It looks lit. Super cool.
Thanks.
I'll make sure to link these in the show notes so we can
thank you
get people hooked up with that. So awesome. Cool. Well, yeah, thanks for coming on. And
yeah, this was fun. This was fun. I enjoyed this. Thank you.
Yeah.
So when how does this work now?
So yeah,
how
do you... So this was live on Twitch, and then we'll go ahead and I'll post it to YouTube and our like all the podcatcher websites in a day or two here when I kind of
okay
get the episode ready to go. And
did you edit it at all, or you just send
I typically it, just... if there's ever something that like if like the whole thing broke or someone like went offline or something, I would cut that out, but typically we just kind of let it go. I don't edit it super crazily or anything. I used to do that, and then it just took too much time, so
yes, I can
I was
imagine.
Just like, you know, yeah. What I just need to get better at not messing up, and then we won't have
right exactly have yeah no, that's why
anyway
I lost my train of thought there when I was trying to explain the story, and I'm like, ugh, that didn't sound so good.
all good no, I'm sure it's fine.
Thank you Yeah, this was fun. I enjoyed I love conversations like this. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. So, cool. Well, yeah. You can find more at the link that Steven said, and I'll make sure to keep those in the have those in the liner notes. I'm not sure when we're gonna do another episode of The Christian Artist. As you can tell, we didn't do one for quite a while here. Connor just had a baby, so he's been very busy. We've been kind of dancing around schedules, trying to figure out when to do episodes, but maybe at some point soon we'll do another episode and continue on the topics we've been covering before this. But I'm totally glad that you reached out, and I'm glad we got to make this episode happen.
Yes, thank you.
Thanks again.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it was great.
All right, it's been The Christian Artist. We are out. Thanks for watching. Adios.